Today I want to speak on one of the lesser known characters of the New Testament, Simon of Cyrene, or Simon of Cyrene. Pronounce his name as you wish. It's in Mark chapter 15 verse 21, the reference I want to start with. Cyrene was a town in northern Africa on the Mediterranean coast, situated in the country that today we call Libya. Simon of Cyrene is mentioned in Mark chapter 15 at the time when Jesus was carrying his cross on the way to his crucifixion. In verse 21, Mark chapter 15 verse 21, when Jesus started apparently to stagger under the weight of the cross, they grabbed this passerby, this man Simon of Cyrene, who was coming in from the country. He is the father of Alexander and Rufus, and they compelled him to carry Jesus' cross. Now, before we go any further, let me just fill you in on some background here. By universal agreement, I think, from earliest Christian times through to the present, Mark represents the teaching of Peter, or the viewpoint of Peter, in this gospel that he writes. Remember that the gospel was written, the gospel of Mark and the other gospels, these gospels were written at least 30 years after the events that they describe. Mark was apparently the first of the gospels, written sometime during the early AD 60s. The events, of course, took place around about the AD 30 mark. At the time of writing, Mark is in Rome, and he is writing this book, it would seem, for the Christians in the church in Rome. Some of the background goes like this. You remember that Mark, as a young man, started off on the travels with Paul and Barnabas. So he gave up and he went back to Jerusalem. After that, there are good New Testament era records that show that Mark went with Peter on an extensive ministry throughout the northern parts of Asia Minor. Now, these are the parts that Paul had been forbidden to enter. So Mark accompanied Peter. He was Peter's helper in much the same way as Timothy was Paul's helper in some other regions that Paul went to. And so they had this extensive ministry for many years around the northern part of Asia Minor, those provinces that border the Black Sea. After that, it seems, they came to Rome. And again, there is evidence in first century records to indicate that Peter with Mark came to Rome. They taught the church there for a while. Now, the church in Rome, we don't know exactly how it was formed. It was not formed by Paul, we know that for a fact. But there were always people going to Rome, travellers, business people. All roads led to Rome, and it was inevitable that Christians would take the gospel to Rome, and so a church started there. After they had taught the church, Peter left to go on further missionary exploits, but Mark stayed behind. And the Christians in Rome asked Mark if he would write down the story of Jesus as they had heard it from Peter. Mark did so, and so as a result, we have Mark's gospel. Now, that is the picture that we're painting. That is a fairly widely held view, and there's plenty in the Bible to support that notion. Now, you won't get it spelt out in the clear terms that I've just given you, but the Bible would support that hypothesis that Mark wrote his gospel for the Christians in Rome as he had heard it from Peter. Now, I'm not going to start talking about the characteristics of Mark's gospel. There's plenty there to show that this very heavily bears the influence of Peter. Let me just concentrate now on Mark. Mark remained in Rome, and he was still in Rome when Paul arrived there with Luke and Aristarchus for the first time. This is the story referred to at the end of the book of Acts, when there was a shipwreck. Paul was shipwrecked on his way to Rome, but eventually he arrived there and he was held for 2 years as he awaited trial. We know from the book of Acts that Luke and Aristarchus accompanied him on that journey. And two letters that Paul wrote while he was in Rome during those 2 years referred to right at the very end of the book of Acts, two of those letters he wrote, the letter to Philemon and the letter to the church in Colossae, which met in the house of Philemon, both of these letters mention in the greetings various people that were with him. And both of the letters mention Luke, Aristarchus, and Mark as those who were with Paul in Rome at the time. So we know that Mark was there in Rome when Paul, Luke, and Aristarchus were there. That's about all I want to say about that for the time being. Now let's go back and fill in now some details about Simon of Cyrene. Now this happened 30 years earlier. Simon of Cyrene was there in Jerusalem at the time of Jesus' crucifixion. He's a North African. He wasn't a resident of Jerusalem. It says he was coming in out of the country. So he had apparently been in the country and was there at the time of the Passover. Now throughout North Africa, there were many Jewish settlers. The Jews had spread, they'd been scattered around many countries of the world, and there were plenty of them there through those northern parts of Africa. In fact, the Greek translation of the Old Testament was made in North Africa by some of these Jews who'd settled in and around Alexandria. Among the Jewish synagogues that grew up in all of these places where the Jews were settled were people of Gentile origin who were called God-fearers. These were Gentiles who were attracted to the Jewish religion by the relative cleanness and honesty and morality of the Jewish faith. They wanted to know more about God, and so they became known as worshippers of God. Some of them actually underwent certain rites and became fully fledged Jews, so to speak. But most of them were simply called God-fearers or worshippers of God, and you meet them repeatedly in the New Testament. In the book of Acts, the Ethiopian man, he was a man who feared God, and he had come to Jerusalem for some festivals. Perhaps Simon was one of these who feared God, and maybe he had come to Jerusalem for this festival of Passover. Lydia, we meet Lydia in Greece, and she was from Turkey, and she was one who feared God, a non-Jewish person who had been going to the Jewish synagogue. We have Cornelius, the Roman soldier, another one who was a non-Jewish person who was a worshipper of God. But none of these people were Christians. They only became Christians, of course, after they heard about Christ. And not only then were they believers in God, they were believers in Jesus. Simon of Cyrene has apparently come from North Africa to Jerusalem for this festival of Passover. And he is now compelled to carry the cross of Jesus on the way to the crucifixion. But notice that Mark says he is the father of Alexander and Rufus. Now you don't get that piece of information in the other Gospels. Why do you get it in Mark? Well, for a fairly clear reason, I should imagine, that Mark was writing for the Christians in Rome, and Alexander and Rufus happened to be part of the church in Rome. And he's making that identification. He said, I'm talking about this man. 30 years ago this happened. Actually, he said he's the father of these two guys here sitting in the front row. It's as if I'm talking to you about somebody. These events happened 30 years ago, and the man I'm telling you, I said, actually, he was the father of John here. Everybody knows John, he's a member of this church. It was his father that I'm actually talking about. And so it was that Mark said that this Simon was the father of Alexander and Rufus. Now, if you want to know a little bit more about those gentlemen, can you turn, please, to the book of Romans? This was written by Paul, and Paul, when he writes to the Romans, the last chapter, please, chapter 16, when he writes to the Romans, he refers to a number of contacts he has there. Now, Paul himself has not actually been to Rome, but he wants to refer to as many people as he can so that he can build himself, you know, you build on the contacts that you have. And this is in preparation, of course, for his own coming to Rome in due course. Romans chapter 16, verse 13. He says, greet Rufus. Ah, here we are. Rufus, eminent in the Lord. So Paul knew Rufus, and he was a prominent person in the church. Now, it's not often you get Paul referring to people as eminent in the Lord. He does have comments about various people that are complimentary and that show that these were senior Christians, to use an expression. Rufus was one of them. I would imagine he was one of the elders in the church, a very prominent man in the church. So greet Rufus, and he says, his mother and mine. So Rufus's mother is also there in the church. Now, the mother of Rufus was, of course, the wife of Simon. We assume that Simon has by now died, and that the mother of Rufus is, of course, a widow. But Paul says of this woman, she is not only the mother of Rufus, but in a sense, my mother. In a spiritual sense, Paul's mother. I don't know of any other woman that Paul refers to in such terms of affection and respect. He talks of Timothy as his son. There's no doubt a close bond between Paul and Timothy. Timothy the disciple and Paul the senior man. But this woman, in some ways, was senior to Paul. And she'd been such a help to him, such a spiritual guide, that he could refer to her as his mother. Well, where did he get to know the mother of Rufus, the wife of Simon? Well, I think that he probably got to know her in Antioch in Syria. So if you want to now go back to the book of Acts, we'll pick up another connection. The book of Acts, chapter 11. Once again, I've just got to fill in a bit of background. I hope I'm not confusing everybody with some of these matters of history and geography. But when Stephen was martyred, you remember that Stephen was stoned to death. Most of the Christians were concentrated in Jerusalem. But then fierce persecution broke out and they spread to different places. And wherever they went, they preached the gospel. But most of them, because they were Jewish people, most of them preached only to the Jews. They kept it within their own ethnic camp. However, there were others who spread it more widely. And these people were not necessarily those who were the dyed-in-the-wool Jerusalem Jews. Now, among the places that these persecuted early Christians fled to were places in North Africa, places perhaps around the Mediterranean, places south in Egypt, maybe across the Jordan River, north into isolated parts of Lebanon and Syria. Sometime later, there was a church established here in Antioch. Now, Antioch, if you go directly north up the coast from Israel, you go up through Lebanon and you get to Antioch, which in those days was in Syria, but today is in a little corner of Turkey, tucked down there, almost on the border with Syria. And this church became a very vibrant church in the early history of that apostolic period. How did it start? Well, in chapter 11, it tells us in verse 19 that the people who were scattered because of the persecution that arose over Stephen, they travelled as far as Phoenicia, Lebanon, we call it today, Cyprus, which is an island in the Mediterranean, and Antioch. And they were speaking the word to none except Jews. As I said, they kept it within the family. But there were some of them, men of Cyprus and Cyrene. So there are Christians in Cyprus and in Cyrene, and this is before Paul has ever gone to Cyprus as a missionary. So these are local converts as a result of that outreach following the martyrdom of Stephen. Among those that have come from Cyprus and Cyrene are these fervent evangelists who preach the gospel not simply to the Jews, but to the non-Jews as well. For example, Greeks, Syrians, other local people. The hand of the Lord was upon them and a great number believed. When the people in Jerusalem heard about this, they sent Barnabas to have a look at what was going on and to give them some encouragement, no doubt. And Barnabas soon saw that this work was more than he could handle. But he knew just the man who could help this church to grow. And the man was Saul of Tarsus. Now Saul had been converted about 10 years earlier. You can get these dates and figures from the data that we have in Paul's writings, in the record of Acts, and in Paul's writing to the Galatians. We won't go into the details now. Just believe me, Paul has been a Christian now for about 10 years. So Paul comes down from Tarsus, and he joins in this work in Antioch, and for the next year, in verse 26, they teach a large company of people, and this is where the Christians first got the name of Christian, a nickname that was given to them. But that church at Antioch now became the vibrant hub from which Christianity radiated out all around. It was the church that had the vision to send its missionaries, Saul and Barnabas actually, into the foreign regions. Now if you go to chapter 13, we pick up now this story. After Paul and Barnabas have been there for a year teaching the church, and a few other things have happened, they've been to Jerusalem, taken some gift of money to help the poor Christians and so on. But now the time has come in chapter 13 when the church in Antioch, through the leading and direction and advice of the prophets and teachers among them, and above all through the direction of the Holy Spirit who spoke to them as they were praying and fasting, they now sent out missionaries into the unreached regions, sending them west of the Mediterranean, going first to Cyprus, but then going into the totally unreached regions up in Turkey, through Asia Minor, and of course it was just going to go on and on through Greece and so on. Now look at the names of the people in the church, verse 1 of chapter 13. There's Barnabas, we know about him of course, and Saul because they had stayed there. But there was Simon, or Simeon, it's just an alternative spelling. There was Simon who was called Niger, N-I-G-E-R, which is the word for black, Negro, if you wish. He was the dark-skinned man among them. Almost certainly, you've got to say Simon of Cyrene, because it was people from Cyrene and from Cyprus who had come and founded this church. Inevitably, those people are going to be among the first leaders of the church. So Simon of Cyrene, we might assume, believed in our Lord Jesus Christ. He went back home to North Africa. He was one of the enthusiasts who now came across. Now, whether he was converted at the time of Jesus' crucifixion, or whether he was converted later through the witness of the Jews that were expelled from Jerusalem after the martyrdom of Stephen, somewhere he's become a Christian. And he, with others, have now come from Cyrene, along with those from Cyprus. They've come to Antioch, they've planted the church. He is now one of the leaders in the church, and he is one of those who commissions Saul and Barnabas to go out in the service of God. This is no doubt where Paul got to know Rufus and Alexander, the two sons of Simon, and also the mother of Rufus, or if you wish, the wife of Simon. "She was my mother," says Paul. No one else gets that title of affection and respect. Only this woman. Why? Well, I would imagine that there is Paul, a young man. He's enthusiastic, he's single, he's got to stay somewhere. Almost certainly you can assume that he was staying in the house of this couple. And if he wasn't staying in the house, he must have been in and out fairly frequently, so much so that these became almost like his spiritual parents. They must have had a tremendous influence on this man during that year or so when he was in Antioch. Simon, one of those who commissioned him to his service, the wife who is not mentioned here in the book of Acts, mentioned when Paul gets the chance, when he writes to the Romans, and he says, "This woman, what an influence she was in my life. What a tower of strength. How she helped me develop my spiritual gifts, my spiritual capacities, my spiritual perceptions. She provided hospitality. She provided the care and that spiritual nurture that means so much." No wonder then when Paul writes to the Romans, he gives special mention to this woman. And so he says, there you have Rufus, and of course Mark has already said that Simon Cyrene is the father of Alexander and Rufus. Rufus is now an eminent man in the church. So not only have Simon of Cyrene and his wife been a spiritual parents to Paul, they have obviously seen something happen in their own family. Now Alexander is in the church there somewhere, I should imagine, or maybe he's somewhere else. But Rufus is certainly there, and Rufus is one of the leaders in the church in Rome. Well, we can draw our conclusions from this as best we like, but I hope that by now the message is coming through to us. What an influence there can be in a home. I can think not only of my own home that I was brought up in, I'd like to think of the home where I brought my own children up in, but I can think of people outside the circle of my own family. Those who in those formative years, my teens, my early 20s, people at home who took me around helping me to develop some ability at speaking to children, or then opening a gospel service with a short testimony or a prayer or some opening hymn, and then moving on from that to giving a short 10 or 15 minute talk, and then moving from that to something else. People that I could confide in and discuss my spiritual pilgrimage with. People that I'm so grateful for. As I look back, I think, goodness me, how tolerant these people were. Not only the people who took me around, but the audience as well. How tolerant they were to put up with me. But they could see that here is a young man who wants to do something. He's enthusiastic. He may not have as much ability as he would like. It certainly doesn't match his enthusiasm, but at least let's encourage him. Please, can we encourage those younger people among us? Are there women and men here where later on somebody's going to grow up and 30 years later they're going to say, "That woman, she was a spiritual mother to me. That man, he was a spiritual father to me. How much I owe those people." And then when eventually Gay and I got married and a couple of children, we went overseas, worked in a foreign country, started off as young missionaries going to change the world all by ourselves, all that sort of enthusiasm of youth. Once again, people there that I got to know. Not only fellow missionaries, but people that became converts in the local church, and then they matured, and so we developed bonds of friendship with these, so that we started to profit, not simply from the wisdom of people who were old enough to be our parents, but then people of our own generation, and people even who were new Christians. My life, Gay's life, our lives have been enriched by those people that we've met in country after country, who've taught us so much of what Christianity is. Now it goes back to our upbringing, maybe. Yes, our homes, we're thankful, both of us, for godly parents who taught us so many things. But both of us are also thankful for these people. And I deliberately avoided mentioning names here this morning, but there are just so many people this way and that. And they will know most of these because I've told them. But what am I doing? What are you doing? Are we just living selfish, self-centered lives, settling down in our nice suburban home and looking after ourselves and making sure our own children are catered for by being in this club and that club? We take them here and we take them there, and then we want to get them good at sport and good at music and good at bush dancing or some other sort of drama, whatever it happens to be, and we're pouring our energies and our interest into our own children. But what are we doing? What are we doing when we look at people round about that obviously must have some potential there? Some of them are loners, some of them don't seem to have any spiritual carers. Can we not do something to be like the mother of Rufus, so that years later that person's going to say, ah, Rufus's mother and mine, because of what they've done? Hospitality. I would imagine that they showed a lot of hospitality to Paul. Whether it was by putting him up that he actually lived in their home, or whether it was by having him home for meals. He was a young bachelor, he was wandering around, he was obviously a bit different from your ordinary run-of-the-mill young men. He had an enthusiasm that was spilling out of his ears. I think that he was probably a bit hot-headed and a bit impatient at times, but he had a fire for the Lord, and all it needed was some sensible people to channel it. Not to try to put it out, not to try to make him orthodox and conservative and respectable and middle class, nice and bland, to satisfy the sensitivities of the conservatives among them. No, they were sensible enough to see that here was somebody, God had his hand upon this person. I could think of a young woman who was an interpreter for me in a certain country. And she was a brilliant interpreter, but there was a young woman, she was only around about 20, she was fired up with love for the Lord. The hand of the Lord was obviously upon her. But because she was a bit unorthodox, the older fellows in the church, who were more my age, and I was probably getting towards 60 at that stage, and here's this young 20-year-old, and she is just bursting around with life and vigour, and they didn't even have enough brains, enough perception to see. And so they were trying to make her conform to their practices and their habits and just calm her down. Oh, I did all I could to encourage her. Years later now, this woman has gone out and she served the Lord in some very rugged Muslim countries of North Africa. She's taken her life into her hands, and she showed initiative in reaching out at great risk to her own personal well-being and security to take the gospel, and she's won people for our Lord Jesus Christ. Can we not but see that there are people among us who are potential Pauls? I was going to say the Apostle Paul. Well, he may be a one-off, but maybe not necessarily. You see what I'm saying? That Simon of Cyrene starts off by simply being grabbed by the scruff of the neck and saying, here, you carry the cross for this man. He's staggering along a bit and we want to make sure he gets to the place where we're going to kill him. And so Simon is made to carry the cross. But you trace the story through, and we finish up where we are here with his family, his wife, the people that have been nurtured through that family, through that household, bringing glory to God, serving the Lord with great fervor. May it be so with you and me.